Welcome, everybody, to Roni's Own Radio, Episode 8. This time we have a great interview with Nathan P. Butler. If you don't know him, he's the founder of StarWarsFanWorks.com, the home of Star Wars Fan Audio. So it's all about creating the Star Wars story, whether it's a drama, a radio show, or a parody, in an audio format. So you let your mind do the painting of the pictures when you're listening to a story. There's a lot of great things there. I recommend that you go there and visit. But this show, we're going to really be looking at Nathan beyond his Star Wars fandom. We're going to look deep into Nathan. We're going to ask him some questions that really kind of get beyond the shell of the Star Wars fandom that he's really known for. So I'm really excited to present this interview to you. I had a great time talking to him. And this is part one of our interview. So now let's get to it. Our interview with Nathan P. Butler.
Well, welcome back to Roni's Own Radio. We have a great treat today. We have Nathan P. Butler with us today, and he's suited up, ready to go. And Nathan is the founder of Star Wars Fan Works and really brought together the Star Wars fan audio community. And it started just as a small group of folks, and it's really kind of grown into this huge community. But this interview is really about you as a person, and I want to kind of break down those little facets of you that you're known as. I definitely feel that you have many different opinions about a lot of different things, and that's kind of what I want to focus on today. Give me three words that describe you from your perspective.
Let's see. I would say definitely mentor or educator, whatever you want to call it. Probably busybody. I am one of those types of people who I can't just really sit down and do nothing. I need to be involved in something. And, you know, even if it's, you know, a day off and it's the middle of the summer, I should be relaxing. You'll probably see me working on a project or something like that. And I guess the other phrase, I would just say probably either creator or intellectual. I don't know if I would put the fact that I'm fascinated by just weird stuff and like to just learn about little odd things. I don't know whether that would come first or it would be the fact that when I do think about that stuff and I come up with some ideas out of it, I almost feel an irresistible compulsion to create something based on that thought process.
When and where were you born?
I was born on October 17th, 1979.
Okay.
So I'm 25, going on 26 now. And I was born in Evansville, Indiana, which is the very southwestern tip of the state. Right after you, if you're going north, right after you cross the Ohio River from Kentucky into Indiana, it's right there.
If you could live anywhere else in the world, where would you live?
Probably, I would say either Sydney, Australia, just because it intrigues me so much, just the look of it, and I gotta say, women with Australian accents are pretty hot anyway.
Sure, sure.
But also, I would probably say, just within the United States, Destin, Florida.
If you could watch two events in history and actually be there, which ones would they be?
Two events. See, well, from a historical standpoint, I would like to have been able to be in the room with Truman when the decision was made to drop the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
Yep.
Just because I'd like to see the moral and the personal conflicts that went through their minds and went through their discussions before making that kind of a decision.
Mm-hmm.
As for the other, well, I mean, there's so many different points in history that are so monumental, but the religious side of me says, thinking back to, whether they're talking birth of Christ or passion of the Christ or something like that, the fanboy side of me would think, you know, to be there in the, one of the first meetings of seeing Lucas try to pitch Star Wars to somebody for the first time, when he first got the concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of torn on what the second one would be.
Okay, all right. What would people be surprised if they knew this about you?
I would say they might be surprised that I probably am more religious than people would make me out to be, or I am more idealistic and more, you know, I see more good in people than it seems, than they would probably seem, especially to the people who listen to Chrono Radio and listen to some of the audio dramas that tend to be somewhat dark and have somewhat darker themes. I tend to come off with a lot of railing, sarcastic, you know, annoyed opinions on a lot of things. My thing, I guess, is sort of I'm very idealistic and try to see the best in things, hope for the best in things, which is probably why I do get so annoyed and go off on so many rants when I see something that's going wrong.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of the idealist being offended by the reality.
What is your greatest asset?
The greatest asset, I would probably just say my mind. I tend to find that my thought process is fairly organized, so I'm able to take different ideas that pop in and turn them into something creatively. One of the things that I found when I'm teaching is I kind of have a knack, not so much for remembering all the little minute dates and stuff like that, but to remember just the odd little stories that can be pulled in or the comparisons that can be made to make something make more sense. Like we were talking about, I wonder if it was ancient India, the earliest Indian empires, and the concept that there's an empire there called the Mauryan Empire at one point that used a very strong army to keep its power, both by using the army outside of the country or of the empire, but also using it against its own people when absolutely necessary. And was able to compare that to what was going on in New Orleans with the looters and how some people were saying that the National Guard should be doing a shoot-on-sight order to the looters. And just being able to do that sort of thing, to me, that's probably been the greatest asset that I've got, to be able to make those types of connections.
Why did you decide to be a teacher?
Well, as you can probably tell already, I'm very verbose.
Sure.
So that's part of it. Actually, I had toyed with journalism for a little bit until the journalism thing kind of came crashing down a little bit. I made the mistake of calling out our school system superintendent in a very highly educationally political part of Indiana for making the decision that basically, the way I looked at it, was robbed students of like 1 to 2 weeks of summer vacation because they decided to make a schedule change. Not just some stuff. And it was just one of those things, you know, only the students would have really given a crap about. But in doing so, basically called for a public apology from this guy that wound up with crap being rained down on our principal's head and then on our superintendent was who got the flack. So I guess it fell down onto the principal, then onto the department head, then onto the journalist advisor, then onto me. That was and that actually got me busted out of an editor-in-chief position for the school's newspaper. But when that happened, you know, I realized that I'm all about explaining things, whether good or bad, especially if it's something that people should be indignant about and seek change about.
Right.
And I was going to need to find some type of venue or profession that would take advantage of that, be it, you know, TV personality, radio personality, or teaching professor, whatever. And when I got knocked out of that journalism program, I basically had a choice, you know, because I want to stay on as basically, you know, a writer or a section editor after having been editor-in-chief and going through all that political BS, or do I want to just get out of it and do something else? And I had a teacher at the time for Advanced Placing United States History, a guy named Art 80, and he taught U.S. history from a why perspective and a what-if perspective. He taught U.S. history. The first semester started now and ran backwards to the Civil War. Second semester started at the beginning and ran up to the Civil War, because it was his belief that the Civil War is kind of the crux of American history. And that just really intrigued me, and I wound up using that free period that wasn't in journalism anymore to be his teaching assistant, or whatever you want to call it. And as we went through that, I got a lot of time to interact with him, and wound up kind of on the same path that he did. I got the same scholarship, I believe, that he did, to the same school that he did, through the same program that he did, and he kind of steered me in that direction, and I was pleased with it as I went throughout college, so I never really got diverted to anything else. I mean, there's other stuff I'm sure I could do,
sure. But
teaching seems to be where I belong. Now, whether or not I belong in this particular school, in this particular state, this particular subject, or high school versus middle school versus elementary versus college, whatever, you know, that's always up in the air. But I think teaching is definitely where I was being drawn to.
Mm. Well, it also sounds like you had a good mentor as well, and that's important. Let's take a pulse check on kids in today's society.
Okay.
The kids that are in your class, what are the toughest challenges that they face in life?
I would say that probably the number one, and I know it's going to sound weird because you would think it'd be like, you know, drugs or violence or something like that. I think the number one problem that they face is apathy, both from themselves, about themselves, and from their parents. I have a lot of students, I mean, not all of my students, but a pretty big chunk of my students are what we would think of as lower socioeconomic standing. Probably 90%, 80% African American school, probably 10 to 5% Hispanic, and the rest is white.
Sure.
And this is Atlanta metro area, South Atlanta metro area. And it seems like in a lot of cases I see parents who don't get involved at all in the kids' schooling. You know, who just seem like, you know, oh, hi, you know, you need to make sure you go to school tomorrow. Here's your lunch money, go. You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, if there's a problem at school, the parents assume that, you know, the school is going to take care of everything. The school is basically the babysitter and surrogate parent. on the other hand, there's a lot of students out there that I have, and not so much whenever I teach seniors. There's some, but right now I'm teaching mostly sophomores, and there's a lot who don't seem to really care where their future is going at this point. They would rather mess around and play around within school and spend, you know, 5 or 6 years in high school trying to graduate rather than trying to do something productive with it, because to them, maybe they feel like that's all there is. I know some get into, you know, the drug aspect, some get into the gang aspect, and certainly pop culture, especially for the African-American community, is still, and as much as you have, the, you know, the there's a great radio station around here. I want to say it's like WAOK. It's all about promoting things like, you know, getting high-ranking African-American businessmen into the school to talk to the students and show them what they can do if they just apply themselves and that sort of thing. But a lot of the students that I'm dealing with base their world views on the stuff they hear in rap songs or in pop culture.
Right.
And rap and pop culture at this point don't really say very much about the notion of, you know, building yourself up, kind of picking yourself up by your bootstraps and doing something with your life. It's more, get me a record deal, give me this, give me that, let me have whatever it is that you can give me, and beyond that, I'm not going to really be taking care of myself. I have to wonder if they cared more about their own future before it was staring them straight in the face, senior or junior year of high school, would they take a different path and be able to be in a much better position as they left high school? And probably the answer is yes on that one.
Wow. I don't want to put the world on your shoulders, but what would change that in their lives?
I would say, I mean, it's a matter of, I think a big part of it is parental involvement. I'm not saying that pop culture is all bad. You know, pop culture is great. You know, I'm a big fan of most things in pop culture. Even I, yes, as these scrawny little white man, listen to Eminem and Dr. Dre every now and then, right?
I won't tell anyone.
Freaks out my students whenever they see me driving away from the school in my Mustang with the windows rolled down and Eminem playing out the windows. There has to be a balance to it.
Right.
You know, if you're going to have the negative influences in many cases that come from a lot of parts of pop culture and a lot of parts of the more pervasive stereotypes, they're still around and certainly, you know, they're still being perpetuated. You have to have somebody there to balance it out, whether it is some type of mentor figure or a teacher, which, you know, by the time you get into these schools that are so friggin' overcrowded, it's very hard for a teacher to be a mentor really of any kind other than just a quick educator for a semester and then on you go. And then there's the parents. There needs to be a balance of this is what is good, this is what is good about you. We see that you can do this well. Let's promote this. Let's try to give you a future. And, you know, even if we don't have the money to necessarily send you to college, let's push you so that you can apply yourself in school so that whenever it finally comes time to possibly go to college, you might be able to get some scholarships you otherwise wouldn't.
Sure.
To take advantage of that as opposed to just sitting back and saying, okay, well, you know, this is your life. You do your own thing. I don't think that there's a lot of parents out there who don't care about the children's future. It's a question of putting that caring into action and actually taking an active role in helping to craft that future that I think a lot of parents don't do.
Sure. It's odd to me that somebody like Abe Lincoln, who really had no education, did the whole process of running for president and then won. What if, I mean, the thought comes in my mind, what if one of the kids in your class really could change the world for the better and maybe could become president one day, but because of just apathy, and they feel that they can't do it, that holds them back.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things where, you know, we've talked about that in class, you know, the whole notion of whether or not that really is true anymore, that anyone can become president if you really want to and you run for it, all that kind of stuff. And that just gets into the whole thing about the question of whether or not presidents really are great men anymore or great people anymore or if they're simply politicians.
Right.
But, you know, that's one of those things where a lot of them don't even think about it, especially since I'm teaching, you know, I would say that one of the smallest demographic groups that I've got are white males, which means that everyone else is either female or not white. And
right.
We have yet to see anyone on the national stage except maybe Elizabeth Dole when she was aiming for it and possibly Hillary Clinton if she does go for it. We have yet to see anyone really reach that high plateau of being a serious contender for president who hasn't been a white male.
Right.
So you talk about stuff like that, you know, you could be part of the leadership, you could, you know, do something with your life, you could be president someday. They just kind of scoff about it. You know, and the whole notion going back to, I don't know if it's Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock or whatever it was, about, you know, you don't want to be the first black president or the first woman president. You'll probably be shot or shot at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at it so very, very cynically, this whole idea of leading a you know, if you're going to lead, you're going to become some big entertainment superstar and lead in that way.
Right.
And it's distressing, but at the same time, you know, there's so many influences out there against it, you have to wonder what they're going to do. Then again, you know, I've had some students before who really struck me as very, very motivated, very bright. I've got one student, and it's sad because a lot of times it's the brightest ones that get picked on because they've got the idiosyncrasies, you know, or the eccentricities. And I had one student who graduated last year. He got a full ride to some, I forget where it was. It was some major engineering school or computer science school. And I've got a feeling he's really going to be going places. We may not hear his name anytime soon, but something that he does or something that he invents or helps to perfect is, I could almost guarantee, is going to at some point influence our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But even to tell him that at this point, you've got the potential to do this, I don't know that he would even think that way. Because it's either a matter of you don't have that motivation, or the ones who do have the motivation, in a lot of cases, are laughed down because of it. Because they're like, oh, you know, what's the odds that you're going to be the one person to change the world or the one person to do this or that? There's a very much a feeling of isolation, it seems like, within the youth of today. There isn't that solidarity of generation. There isn't that notion of bringing yourselves together. A lot of what they're hearing right now when it comes to politics is the infighting and the bickering and stuff, so there isn't that sense of honor and public service anymore
mm-hmm.
for them. Something's got to change, otherwise, you know, our next generation of leaders, we're going to be looking at something along the lines of, you know, what people feared when the children of the 70s would become the leadership.
Right.
And I thought, oh, well, after all the stuff of the 70s, it's going to be such a scattered, haphazard leadership, is anything going to be able to get done? And, you know, probably verdict's still out on that, probably will be for about another 50 years.
Sure.
But, you know, I worry that that's going to be the same thing that comes with these kids, that hopefully some leaders will step up. They've got to be out there. I'm just probably not seeing many of them on a daily basis.
Well, what's great is that you have a heart for it, and that not only you're a historian, so you can see the missteps of the past, and you can, you know, say you have a choice. You can go down the same road, or you can take a different path. And these are the markers that you need to watch for. And I think that and we're in a digital age with broadband and digital cameras and digital audio, I think that there's a lot more choices that you can start a career in your bedroom and make a name for yourself if you so choose. And you can voice your opinion and maybe rally for change. I mean, Cindy Sheehan went and sat in front of Bush's house for 5 weeks or whatever. And that caused quite a stir, but I imagine there's similar people with similar ideals that are maybe doing a podcast or doing some kind of films or that kind of thing. So I think the opportunity of this digital, I think that it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, with tools like an Avid and all these kind of things in their hands to see what the future holds.
The thing that I would say about this generation is because they are so skeptical, probably the most skeptical generation of government I could think of since perhaps the generation that grew up amid Watergate,
mm-hmm.
I would say that these kids are much more likely to take drastic changes when it becomes necessary.
What a great interview with Nathan P. Butler. That was part one. We have part two, three, and four. We'll probably end up with four parts when it's all said and done. I hope you really enjoy it. Please drop me an email at jeff.roney@gmail.com. Also, please visit my website at jrd-now.com. And I thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next time.
Roney Zone Radio.